Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols. You'll learn about me in this episode. I'm Executive Director of Learning Design and Development at Open Polytechnic in New Zealand, a provider of online vocational education. I'm current president of ICDE and founding host of this podcast. It's episode 100, and it was suggested by more than one guest that I'm a leader in online learning myself. So this one is all about me. This podcast is sponsored by the International Council for Open and Distance Education, ICDE, the leading global membership organization working towards bringing inclusive, quality education to all. By joining the ICDE global network of flexible and distance learning, you can help transform the world through inclusive education. Become a member or find out more by visiting www.icde.org. A te nā koutou, ka Aotearoa te whenua e ru ana taku nākou. Ko Mark Nichols tōku ingoa. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Hi everyone, my name is Mark Nichols. I'm from New Zealand. Welcome, welcome, welcome to you all. It's normal for me to begin an interview with someone giving a brief overview of their career and how they got started in open distance learning. So here's my story. I'm actually a university dropout, a late graduate in management studies from the University of Waikato here in New Zealand. I started lecturing in business studies on graduation, mainly because I didn't really know what I was going to do. And I was then asked what I would do my master's in teaching in those days, still today. If you're going to teach on a bachelor's program, you need to have a degree higher. So it was important to my employer that I do a master's program of study. At about that time in New Zealand, Professor Phil Race came from the UK. He was running workshops on instructional design. And up until that time, I'd been developing resources on CD-ROM. I'd been authoring them in HTML and publishing them and distributing the CD-ROMs to students. So Phil came over from the UK in the mid to late 1990s. And after his workshop, I said to him, Phil, I'm being asked to do my master's. What do you think I should do my master's in to get into this type of thing, into instructional design, into resource-based learning? And he said, have you heard of the Open University? I hear that they're starting a new master's program. Now, I had not heard of the Open University UK at that stage, but I reached out. And about that time, too, I read Technology, Open Learning, and Distance Education by Tony Bates in 1997. And that also resonated with what I'd been doing. So at that time, in the mid to late 1990s, my eyes were being opened to a different form of education that was really in tune with the sorts of interests that I had by way of making resources and sharing them with learners so that they could study in their own time. So I made an approach to my employer. They supported me. And so I did a Master of Arts in Open and Distance Education with the Open University. I did it at a distance from New Zealand, the other side of the world, so an automatic 12-hour extension on everything. And I graduated in my pajamas with distinction at 3 o'clock in the morning in 2001. I was sitting around my computer with my in-laws and my wife, all of those were also in their pajamas at the time, as my virtual name was read out in the graduation ceremony. And of course, those were the days of dial-up. So my computer crashed when my name was called out. So I wasn't actually there for the virtual moment. But that was the start of a very, very interesting career to date. And I've had opportunity now to interview many of the authors whose work inspired me at the time, beginning with Tony Bates, who I interviewed in The Plough in Simpson and Milton Keynes back there, and I think it was 2017. Now, on graduation, once I had the MAODE, I was able to move full-time into e-learning-related roles. And, of course, I had access now to a rich theory. I could see how it all fitted together. And as technology continued to improve, as we went into broadband and now fiber, as synchronous webcasting became a thing, now that we can all make much better use of technology to see one another face-to-face and talk real-time, I had a rich theoretical base to build all of those developments on. Across that time, too, I became involved in a lot of professional organizations. So there was DEANS, the Distance Education Association of New Zealand, now FLANS, the Flexible Learning Association. I was involved in the executive teams for Escalite and later EDEN, the European Distance Education Network, and now the International Council for Open and Distance Education, ICDE. I entered into executive leadership at Open Polytechnic in 2010, so I've been there now for 14 years. But for 3 years of that, I transferred to become the Director of Technology Enhanced Learning with the Open University. I was there for 3 full years at the start of 2016 before returning to New Zealand. Now, the whole time I was involving myself with professional groups. As I mentioned, I've been in the executive of Deans, Escalite, Eden, and now with the ICDE. And it's been a very, very interesting ride. The conferences, the people, the ideas are all just incredibly rich. And now Tony Bates wants to provide a bit of an interview. So I'll hand it over to Tony.
Good morning, Mark. It's very nice talking to you from Canada. Let me just introduce myself. My name's Tony Bates. I've been working in open and distance learning for more than 50 years. Started at the British Open University. I was one of the first staff there and ended up in Canada teaching at the University of British Columbia and delivering online programs there. And then I retired at 65 and became a consultant and worked all around the world as a consultant on mainly online learning and e-learning. And I'm currently writing my memoirs, including a history of educational technology and open and distance learning. And I'm publishing these parts of these as blog posts. So that's my background, but this is really about you, Mark. You're now the president of ICDE, and its current shape is about 40 years old. What are the key challenges you see for the organization now that things are quite different than the early 1980s?
I'm really glad you asked that. And Tony, in your intro, you forgot to mention that you're actually the first leader and legend of online learning. It's because of you that this podcast found its feet. So it's very good to be talking with you now. So ICDE, so the I stands for international. And one thing I'm really keen to help ICDN is actually maintaining that truly global membership, pressing into those countries and areas where ICDE isn't well known or well represented. I also think, too, that open and distance are terms we need to reclaim. Not so much the terms themselves, but the challenge and innovation they drove us to. So you mentioned the Open University, now 50 years old, open to people, places, and ideas. Most universities now can actually say that. The sorts of things that the Open University was set up to do, enable education for those who couldn't attend a normal university. Lots of universities have made plenty of traction down those lines over the last few years. And I think too, a lot of universities are now pressing into the open distance learning space through technologies. 50 years ago, technology was nowhere near what it is today. Everyone is now connected, or most at least. We're able to have conversations like these through video conferencing, unheard of even 20 years ago for the mass market. So things are really, really changing. The challenges for ICDE, though, were somewhat pressed by you, actually, last year at the Costa Rica conference. You wrote a blog post just asking the question, who is not here? And I think that was a very, very challenging question for us in ICDE to think about. There are a lot of universities that have made a significant change over the last few years, now have well over 100,000 students. These are the new mega universities. And yet they weren't represented in Costa Rica. For some reason, they didn't see themselves as open distance universities. They saw themselves as online universities. And many of those weren't represented and aren't yet in the ICDE fold. I certainly plan to help those universities find their identity with ICDE. So more theoretically, it was 40 years ago that Otto Peters drove the term distance education into focus in the 1980s. Before then, it was correspondence. And my sense is that the term distance now has its use by date come. I think we need to reclaim the agenda for distance because distance means now the same as correspondence did back there in the 1980s. It's no longer the current term used to describe the sorts of education that we were advocating all those years ago. So in a recent article in the Asian Journal of Distance Education, I just described some of my thinking around these lines. I think it's time we reclaimed the term open and also reclaimed the term or changed the term distance. And I'm hoping to draw together a special issue in a journal to debate that theme. I think we need to be really clear as to what open education is now. I think it needs to be described in terms of availability, inclusiveness, scalability, and sustainability. Nowadays, when we hear the term open, we expect to hear open educational resources or open educational practices after it. We expect to hear connotations of free, free to use, free to reuse. I think, though, we need to be much more ambitious in how we understand open, and I'd like to reclaim that term. Now, those four terms next to open, they're not really my terms. I need to acknowledge Mark Brown from Dublin City University, Torun Jelsvik, who's the Secretary General of ICDE, Neil Fasinda, the former ICDE president. They've really been challenging thinking in this area recently, so I am keen to help take ICDE in that direction. Of course, technology is now completely different. Internet was just an emerging dream in the 1980s, and I think we can all take some pride that distance education theorists were very quick to pick up on it. I've got the book Mindweave on my shelf. It's a 1989 book considering computer-mediated communication and distance education. Very, very good chapters in there still. And some of the authors, of course, have been now interviewed for the podcast. It's been good touching base with the personalities behind those chapters as well. And in those days, back in the 1980s, it was really easy to tell the difference between on-campus and distance education. Now, though, it's not. We took a huge leap forward during COVID-19. Distance education used to be asynchronous. It can now be synchronous. Very few people in the 1980s and 1990s saw the need for synchronous distance education. We felt that we'd escaped lectures in the format that we had. Now, though, thanks to technology, lectures can again become front and center. So distance on campus, it used to be quite binary. It's now very much multifaceted. It's harder to distinguish between distance and on-campus education, especially since universities can now be bimodal. They can be both on-campus and distance using the exact same model of education. Just put a video camera up in front of your lectures, stream it live, you've got distance education. But there's still something very precious about the goals for openness, that availability, that inclusiveness, scalability and sustainability. We can offer quality education at scale. We can bring education to those who, for whatever reason, can't attend a campus conveniently. And I think that's what we really need to stand for. I'd also like to replace the D for distance for designed, but I know I've got quite a bit of influencing to do on that one. I'm really happy for it to be something else. But I think we do need to reclaim the agenda for what's increasingly thought of as online education. Distance no longer has the currency it once did.
I think you're right to focus on the open part. Open is much more than just open education resources, which seems to be the main discussion about open these days. Mm. And they're very important. And as you know, I've got an open textbook, but there are still millions around the world who don't have access to education. And I think ICDE is a really important organization that can help these people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if we do change the D to designed, the question then becomes, how can we design educational opportunities that will enable that open education for people who don't currently have access to it? I think by using the term distance, we immediately frame ourselves as separate to on-campus, that there's just a different mindset there. But if we're able to think in terms of design, what must we do? How can we tailor the educational offering to meet the needs of those people who can't actually access at the moment? I think there's a lot of really exciting work to be done there.
Right. You've had some changes in the post-secondary, particularly the polytechnic sector in New Zealand, and there's been quite a bit of controversy about that. Would you like to say something very briefly about what happened, both in the initial reform and then what happened to the reform and what's happening now?
Sure. I'll try and guard my words a little bit, though, Tony, and just to provide the disclaimer that this is just my perspective, someone who was caught up in the middle of it all. So in New Zealand, there was a reform of vocational education announced some years ago by the then Labor government. The idea was to stop the competition across the sector. We're a relatively small country here in New Zealand. We had 16 polytechnics, 9 industry training organizations. And the thought was, do we really need that level of institution to maintain a healthy vocational sector? So there's a lot of work done to bring about a single organization called Te Pūkenga that would combine the polytechnic and industry training sectors into one organization. Now, it did fail. It failed primarily because of a change in government. But I've got to admit, I had some serious concerns about the direction that we were heading in, particularly from an open distance learning perspective. So Te Pūkenga was required by legislation to offer on-the-job, face-to-face and distance delivery. Now, you'd think that if that was your mandate, you'd start by designing an education model that would cater for all of those different forms. But there was no education model developed. Eventually, once Te Pūkenga organized a structure, we were told that the future would be blended learning and that there would be resources shared online. But I'm afraid that was all rather vague. There was no real tangible model that we could actually take a look at or participate in. I think it was also quite telling too that early on, ODL experts didn't really have a platform. I wrote about this a little bit in the AJDE article, but it became quite clear to me that part of it was because our terminology was now appropriated by others. They didn't really see ODL as a distinctive field of scholarship because openness in education, as mentioned earlier, it's about access to many people's minds. There's a very, very accessible vocational system in New Zealand already. Distance, well, it can mean anything that doesn't require classroom attendance. So quite a few other ITPs, polytechnics, were offering distance education alongside the Open Polytechnic. So straight away, the question became, well, do you really need an Open Polytechnic? Now, of course, the Open Polytechnic is designed as an ODL institution. Everything we do is designed for that distance learner. For most other organizations, sort of dipping their toes in distance learning, they've got perhaps a small, keen school or small, keen program that's working well in distance, but the whole organization isn't really behind it. So the outcomes and model just aren't the same. I think it was also quite telling that those who were making the decisions didn't really understand distance education. In fact, quite often, we would be referred to as an online education provider, not a distance education provider. And in many public forums, the word distance wouldn't be used. It would be called online. Now, I don't think online actually means anything. I've written about that as well. But it really, at the heart of it all, there was no educational model. There was no real means of aligning the investment in courseware with education across on-campus, work-based, and distance. And I think with a bit of thought, it could have been done really, really well. I think Te Pukenga might have gotten there eventually, but it was just really annoying from my perspective to see decisions being made about online and distance education by people who just really, frankly, just were not experts in the area. They weren't in touch with 50 years of scholarship. They had very little idea of the scalability and the opportunities that a good ODL might have provided. So it failed mostly through a change in government, but I think the disappointment that ODL was seen as incidental to the changes was really at the heart of it for me. We did lobby quite hard to it, Open Polytechnic. We tried to bring in international expert opinion, quite a few names that I think, Tony, will be familiar to you. One of whom described the putting aside of ODL as, and I quote, an exercise in national self-harm. And I think overall that's probably what might have resulted had the ODL agenda not been picked up. Now, in the initial restructuring of Te Pukenga, Open Polytechnic was left alone. We were placed alongside. But it's possible that our function might have been split apart in favor of blended learning with a campus base instead of a centralized model of distance education, which we still enjoy now. Open Polytechnic is now a part of the network, and we're able to offer a much more regionalized view of ourselves now. So I'd done some work on modes of learning through the Commonwealth of Learning, which was being engaged with by Te Pukenga Central, but outside of the ODL framework. So I think it was a very, very noble effort, I have to say. I think at the heart of it all, the reform of vocational education, hand on heart, everyone at Open Polytechnic believed in it. We did believe that the competitive model that had been in place was just unsustainable for a country of our size. But unfortunately, in bringing it all together, I don't think Te Pukenga had built on the right foundation. I think ODL should have been at the very, very center. Now, you'd probably expect me to say that as president of ICDE. But it was really disappointing that the voice of ODL didn't really make much of an impact as the organization was being put together.
And what's happening now?
Well, Te Pukenga is now being actively disestablished. So the minister has made clear that she expects polytechnics to now work within their regions. And there's been a lot more empowerment now for local executive directors to pick up that regional mandate, which for us means offering education right across Aotearoa New Zealand as a national distance provider. I have to express my admiration, actually, for those who are at the centre managing the disestablishment. I think they're doing a terrific job, and it must be a very, very difficult task for them to unpick the work that they've been doing over the previous few years. Now, we're hoping that we can still keep the collegial relationships that we built up during Te Pukenga. Yeah, it's interesting years of rebuilding ahead of us, I think.
Mark, you're in an interesting position. You've got a good knowledge of the history of online and open learning. But where do you see the future going in this field? Do you see it becoming more technology-focused, or do you see it becoming more human interface or more blended? In say 30 years' time, where do you think the field will be?
I think to some extent, all of the above. I think we're going to see many more models of education develop and also flourish. I think our days of imagining we can control the models of education are well over. If we think of education as being best when it's designed well, designed for the audience, designed for the market being catered for, I think we'll see a whole plethora of different possibilities. Some with lots of face-to-face and lots of interpersonal relationship. Others with a lot more digital, perhaps a lot more asynchronous, a lot more distant, if you like, in that traditional meaning of the term. So I think going forward, we'll see a lot more learner-centered education. We'll see a lot more choice. We'll see much less semesterization. We'll see a lot more flexibility for learners. I think there will be campuses where you have to attend. There might be residential campuses where that type of education is really valid and valuable to those who can afford it and have the opportunity to do it. But I also think we'll see some wonderful opportunities through open and designed education where you can study from home. You can study from the convenience of your own timetable. I like to think, too, that going forward, we'll think less in terms of technology and more in terms of education, just getting back to the basics of what we are actually trying to achieve in our sector. So we want to have people who are independent learners with a generous, open, and yet also critical way of engaging with knowledge and other ideas. I think the future is probably less defined by ChatGPT and technologies, more by just getting back to that heart of what it means to be educated and what it means to educate. So I think we'll see more focus on the design of education models that make good use of technology. We'll see a renewed focus on open education. We'll see more availability. We'll see more inclusiveness. I think we'll see more scalability. We'll see much more larger universities moving ahead. But also I think we'll see more sustainability. The university sector at the moment is very, very poor in terms of financial return. And I know it's not all about the economics, but there's no way in which we can justify paying out millions of dollars in deficit for universities that just simply need to change their educational model. So I like to think that the future of education will put a lot more attention on those things, not so much incorporating the inevitable march of technological improvement, but more along the lines of becoming sound institutions that really do educate the populace. So technology will just continue to advance, and I suspect new educational theories will emerge as well to help us leverage them in the name of learning. About 10 years ago, I was asked to prepare a teaching and learning strategy for Open Polytechnic, and it caused a lot of soul searching for me because I wanted to avoid all the normal buzzwords. I didn't want it to become a hodgepodge or a salad of key buzzwords. And I was really fortunate to attend a keynote by Emeritus Professor Sir Mason Jury of Massey University here in New Zealand, who talked about education in terms of whakapiri, whakamana, and whakamarama. Those are te reo Māori terms that mean engagement, enlightenment, and empowerment. And something really connected with me then. And from then on, all of my thinking about education has been around those three terms. How do we design educational opportunities that engage, enlighten, and empower our learners? So moving forward, I hope that's what we get back to. How do we design systems that enable that? Technology is there. Technology is wonderful to help us design things that will enable that. But I'd like us to see education more in those terms, the future of education in those terms. I've also been quite inspired by Olaf Savakarikta's micro, meso, and macro views of how education works. So looking at the overall education system, looking at the institution, and also looking at the teaching and learning dynamics. And I think the future of education, if we're going to design it well, needs to consider all three of those things alongside one another so that we're able to just really get to the heart of what we're doing, design systems that are going to work, design organizations that are going to work, and then, of course, the teaching and learning models within those that will work well. So I think we'll see universities start to get to grips with the importance of actually designing their educational offerings in pursuit of openness, and also to no longer take their educational models for granted, but to do some serious thinking about how they operate. What teaching and learning are they offering? What are they encouraging? What are the limits of what their model will enable by way of innovation? I think, though, at the moment, Tony, I'm finding it hard to see past the 10th to 13th November 2025. There's a lot of attention now on getting the World Conference together for ICDE, which is being held here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, from the 10th to 13th November 2025. Link to the website. I'll make sure it's on the notes for this interview.
Mark, you've done, I think, 100 episodes of Leaders and Legends of Online Learning. You've probably interviewed more of the top thinkers in this field than anyone. I'm wondering, What was the biggest surprise you've had, or what was the most interesting thing you learned from out of all these 100 interviews?
The answers to those two things are quite different. The biggest surprise was just how open people were to being interviewed. You, Tony, the very first interview in Milton Keynes and Simpson there at the Plough, I was astonished that you said yes. And yet,
you bought me a beer, Mark. I mean, every man has his price, and mine's pretty low.
Had I known I'd gotten away with a beer, I wouldn't have bought you dinner. But I think the biggest surprise has really just been how open people have been to having a conversation. And the format's been quite simple. I've just asked people about who they are, what their work is, what their thoughts are on education at the present time, and asked them to suggest two more people to interview. And it's just been a really, really astonishing response. I've only had, I think, two or three people refuse, and it's usually been because they've been far too busy. But in terms of what I've learned, I've really learned that the term online brings a lot of things together. No two interviewees have had the same perspective on online education. There's always been some sort of subtle difference or some different specialty that individuals have brought. So there have been multiple conversations about the common theme of online education, but they've gone in quite different directions sometimes. I think the other thing that's really surprised me is just how similar the conversations have been around the world. I think we all face similar challenges. We all have similar opportunities. There was always something, though, that resonated with others around the world. The sorts of conversations I had with UNISA, even with Mahabali in Egypt, there were challenges there and insights that would benefit anyone around the world because things can be quite similar in that space. I also was surprised too to find that there are many, many talented, enthusiastic, gifted and innovative people all around the world that I've never heard of. And their work is both interesting and very transformative. And this is Interview 100. I hope we go on for many, many more, but there's many, many more people yet whose stories need to be told, whose work is very inspirational, and who have the opportunity to help shape our field. The major lesson, I think, for me that I've gotten from all of this too, is that to be a leader and legend in online learning, you need to be extremely generous in your scholarship, as well as your sense of service to others. Tony, you've taken an hour out of your day to have this interview. You're not being paid for it. There's a wonderful generosity about you, despite the incredible fame that you have and the work that you've done. You mentioned the open textbooks before. You've invested hugely in this field. And I think that's quite telling in terms of what it takes to actually stand out in this area. You need to be someone who's generous, not just with your scholarship, but also just with your sense of time. It's been really humbling learning more about the personalities of those who are internationally renowned authors and leaders. And I think that humility also is something really quite key that I've taken away from all 100 guests. I think that the biggest surprise of all, though, is connecting with you again on this 100th episode. 8 years ago, we were sitting in that pub. I remember Dire Straits in the background thinking, oh, no, how on earth is that soundtrack going to escape the podcast release? But actually, I need to give tribute to Nev Allington, who I met while I was at the Open University. He's done all of the producing for this podcast. He's listened to every single interview at its most minute. He has been an absolute star in terms of getting this podcast out there. In fact, it would not exist without Nev Allington. He didn't want to appear in this episode, but I really do need to give homage to him. He has made this all work. And of course, I also need to acknowledge to the ICDE, who now produce the podcast. I'm very grateful for them for taking on the challenges of the administration and also the small costs associated with it. So 100 episodes. Biggest surprises and biggest lessons are that there's a need for this. It's important to have these conversations alongside the literature, alongside the conferences, alongside the gatherings. It's really important, I think, for people to get a sense of the people behind the theories, behind the leadership that's in this space.
I think this is an appropriate time to thank you too, Mark, for taking on this project, which I found absolutely fascinating. It's terrific. I mean, we do work to a certain degree in isolation. We're all in our own little cocoons. Mm. And it's so important to hear others facing the same kind of challenges and how they're dealing with them. And you've opened up that world for me. So I'm certainly for myself, I'd like to thank you, but also for all your other listeners in this series. You've done a terrific job, Mark, and we're all deeply grateful to you.
Thanks, Tony. It's been an absolute pleasure. That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.